Welcome to Look Behind the Look, the new podcast that examines iconic looks in film, television, music, and fashion history. I'm your host, Tiffany Bartok. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us. This week, my guest is the incredible Daniel Martin, who in the makeup world might be considered class president. He knows absolutely everyone. Everyone knows him. He is kind to everyone and can make anybody feel beautiful. He is also extremely socially conscious and an important voice in the industry and beyond, asking others to rise up and create social change. You're going to hear more about us talking about this in our conversation, but I will also tell you here that Daniel and I talk a little bit about an event that had just happened when we did the interview, and now it's been a couple of weeks, but it's still fresh in all of our minds. Daniel began his career apprenticing at an Aveda concept salon before teaching for the brand regionally, and through Aveda, he met Pat McGrath, and the story unfolds very quickly from there. His career highlights include his contract with Dior Beauty and his consulting for Honest Beauty. And now you can find him shining at Tatcha as the first ever global director of artistry and education for the brand. And I absolutely love Tatcha products, by the way. And no, nobody asked me to say that. Many, many, many professional makeup artists swear by prepping the skin with Tatcha products. So definitely check them out. They're great. A quick search of Daniel will bring you an insurmountable amount of videos with tips. They're especially for no makeup makeup and easy makeup. And I found myself watching hours and hours of them in preparation for our conversation. And I instantly was feeling his positive and inclusive, we've known each other for a million years energy beaming through each video. So if you ever want to improve your entire day, I suggest taking a look at them, just having them on in the background. And yes, he is the makeup artist who was that important element to Meghan Markle's royal beauty on her wedding day. But you'll see from our conversation that there's so much more to Daniel, and I am excited to share our conversation with you all. So Daniel, thank you so much for joining me today. I've been wanting to have you on forever. I just started this in September, and you know, one of my best friends is Troy and Nathaniel, and they were like, "Yeah, when are you having Daniel on?" And I was like,
"I love those boys so much.
They're the best."
Are you in the city?
Yes.
Oh my are God! I live on the Upper West Side.
Oh, what? Okay, we're getting together. I'm half vaccinated, so
me too, totally
awesome. Yeah. Okay, so we're definitely getting together. I can't believe we're talking about like that now. Like it's happening. We're actually able to plan like summer and spring get-togethers. It's very exciting.
We're turning that COVID corner. So.
My God, thank God. Thank God. Well, COVID for you has been kind of interesting because you were blessed with this position at Tatcha.
Yes.
Know, like right hallelujah. In the midst of it. How did that come to fruition? Had it been in the works before COVID? Oh, okay.
Yeah, totally. So I saw Vicky, I want to say it was the summer before the new year. And she was like, look, this, and it was during the time of the acquisition with now Unilever.
Okay.
And it just came out of the blue. And I was like, well, I'm on contract with Dior and Honest Beauty. And you would have to, you know, for me to accept this, you would have to get me, you know, basically buy me out of my contract. And then
Dior.
And she came back and they're like, we can. And at this point, I was 6 years in with Dior, 3 years in at Honest. I have such an incredible relationship with both brands, but I was always able to play with Tatcha because they knew my history with Vicky. They knew that, and both weren't exclusive. They were non-exclusive. So I was able to have my hands with other brands that were non-compete.
Oh, okay.
So I was very fortunate to have that opportunity. But at that point, I was like, I would love to get in full time, so to speak, to really get into product development, education, and just kind of slow my roll down.
Yes.
By that point, I was traveling for 3 years straight every month. With Dior or Honest. So if I wasn't in Paris, I was in LA, or I mean, I just was all over the place. And it just got to a point where it was like, I need to slow this down. It's And then the pandemic happened. And hallelujah that I had that Tatcha gig, because I mean, I don't know how. Oh my goodness.
What a blessing.
What a year. Yeah.
But isn't it some, you, every single makeup artist says the best part of the pandemic is being forced to stop traveling. And I know traveling sounds so glamorous, but like what you were heading up the shows, is that, were you traveling to do shoots and work, or was it to promote?
Yeah. So yeah, it was a bit of everything. So up until that point, like 2 months, 2.5 months before we like literally closed the border, I was on a press tour with Elizabeth Moss for Invisible Man.
Oh, so, which I loved, by the way.
That movie was so good.
So dope.
So it was like Spain, Italy, Paris, London. And then it was like Paris again for the shows.
Oh. So,
and then Sundance in the middle of that. So it was like every month I was on a plane, and then I had to, I was actually with Megan the week that the UK and the US were shutting down the borders.
Oh, wow.
So I was trying to figure out how I was going to get back before I couldn't.
Oh, God.
So, yeah. So once I got home, I'd been home, and it was a blessing in disguise.
For like, sure. What's going to change about all that? I mean, I'm a little bit nervous in the way that I feel like for the press tours and stuff, that people will see how easy it can be. And I'm scared for people to lose their jobs and things like that. But have you been hearing any buzz about how things like that are going to work now, so that we're not exhausting a whole team with a press junket, or?
Right.
I mean, I suppose the jobs won't really go away, but maybe they'll just find ways to make it easier.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this world of virtual will definitely play more, because they've realized that they can get the same information out, not necessarily having to bring the talent to the country. They could all do it remotely. So that may change. I think people want to get back into some sort of normalcy, but at the same time, you'll have to have precautions, and you'll have to have testing. And like last week, I was at 30 Rock with Maya Rudolph for SNL. And it was like every day that I was there, I had to get rapid tested. So, and then they had like COVID cops on set. So you had to have your face shields and your masks. And like, they would get you if you had your mask up, or like if you weren't 6 feet apart, they'd come in like push you away. So I think the production companies have all figured out how to manage that lay of the land, but it's going to be, you know, different. Time for us to be like, okay, just be a bit more cautious,
mm-hmm.
and just understand space.
Understand space. Yes.
Yeah. And it's going to take a lot of time.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see what happened. I know that SNL is doing everything right, but it sounds like they're like one of the only ones that really like are just very adamant about everything. So that must have been a lot of fun working on Maya last week.
It was. And just to learn how the whole institution works.
Of SNL?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I've been a fan of that show since high school, and like have watched it religiously up until this point. So just to see how everything moves, and the collaboration process between the writers and the talent, and even their like the makeup department team, it's amazing. Oh,
they are the gold standard, I feel like. It's like such a well-oiled machine as 100%. Far as jobs go. I remember when I was like wanting to do makeup for TV and film, and they all said, unless you train yourself at SNL, you have to find a way in at SNL. They're like offered, and I wrote a letter asking to mop the floor.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I was like, I will mop the floor. Never got it. It was a handwritten letter. I don't know if it got there. I don't know.
That was one thing that I'm pissed about, was that John D and I, who was doing my hair, we got invited to their room, to the makeup department head room. And we never had a chance to go because we were so busy. But like, I just want to see everything. I know. He would actually be great to have on. I think his name is Louis. And he's been there 25 years.
Yes, Louis. I know. And he can do a bald cap like no other. It is just, I know he is, he's an icon for sure. Yes. I definitely would love to have that. I wanted to ask you, oh, you're from Seattle. I'm from Portland.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Oh,
so,
have you gone home? Oh, well, I mean, sorry.
No, I had a huge trip planned for July that got canceled. So I have not been home for quite some time, but you know, it is the best. Have you been there recently?
I haven't. I mean, I haven't been there since high school. So,
oh my gosh, Daniel.
I know. So I need to like go down to Portland. I have some friends in Eugene that I want to see. My niece is in, she's outside of Portland. So like, I definitely want to make my way down. But it's funny, after Portlandia came out, it's just like, I mean, how does your friends and family feel about that show?
I mean, they loved it just because it, people could see how special Portland was. They didn't see it as an insult at all, you know, but I think it they didn't like how like now this area is 22,000 because Fred Armisen lives there, or you know, for renting the space and like all that stuff for shoots or whatever. So it became a little bit more expensive, you know, where they heard where the tourist spots were. So I think they didn't like that.
Gotcha.
That only thing, but it was, I mean, pretty spot on.
Yeah.
The show.
Oh my God. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Cause it totally reignited my interest of Portland again, because I mean, when I left in the 90s, it was so different.
Oh yeah. I left in 97. Yeah. 97. And then came to New York, but yeah, it was when I visit, it's very different. I loved how Fred said once, like, it's a very emotional city. And it was funny. He was talking to Terry Gross about it. And I was like, that is such the word. It's such an emotional city, you know,
wow.
Just, like everybody's so dramatic and carries the weight of the world, but yet this like laissez-faire attitude. It's interesting.
Could you move back?
I could move back. I could easily move back, but my husband, he's a New Yorker. I mean,
I
love
so
New York.
Mine.
Really?
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're going through.
I'm like, come on. I think we have to wait till we're like 70, which is fine. Yeah. but I do know the feeling and the status of working the Mac counter at Nordstrom, that because when I was growing up, that's where I got my first, you know, 8 things from Mac, you know, and it had a little thing like this, a little stand, and like there was Studio Fix and maybe Shag and yogurt, you know, and I would just like covet the Mac cosmetics. And so that's where you got your start. Is that right?
Yeah, totally.
And then
my first job at Nordstrom's was gift wrapping. And then the Mac counter opened and they knew that I was an art history major and they saw that I like could do makeup. So they asked me to join. So it was really awesome.
Wait, so it was like the first counter at Nordstrom?
It was the first counter at Nordstrom.
Oh, exciting. And
Westlake Center.
Okay, Westlake Center. Yeah. That is exciting. And so you felt like you arrived. I mean, that's all you really needed at that point, right?
Yeah. I mean, star
quality.
And it was like when they opened, I mean, like they had drag queens and they had these like club kids with like plastic wigs and platform shoes. And at that point I was like, I knew I always wanted to get to New York, but it was like paper magazine, interview magazine, that whole thing that was happening on the East Coast was what I wanted to be a part of. Because I mean, you too, being from Portland, like we kind of grew up with grunge before grunge was grunge.
Yeah.
So like I saw Mudhoney, Nirvana, all those bands at all ages clubs for free.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, Seattle, Seattle, Seattle. And I was like, I need to get the fuck out. Like, these aren't my people.
That is too funny. I remember visually seeing, like when my son asks me about like the hippie trend or eras, you know, certain eras. I mean, I can remember visually seeing that wave of grunge, you know, just come in and take over. And then feeling like we were so a part of something that was becoming so famous. And then, you know, it became something else. And we have definite bragging rights being able to see those bands on the ground floor for sure. That was
totally,
pretty exciting stuff. And being able to see Mac in its glory, you know, and it was first evolving. That was, it's something that I don't know. I'm always talking about the kids today and how they.
But it's so true. It's so true. Different.
It very, very. There
how
was
old
nothing
is your son?
He's 12. Yeah, he's 12. So I think, and he didn't know Portland at all. I got to get him there. But I think that there's nothing like the culture of the department store. And I don't know if it'll ever come back, where you got to do every type of face and, you know, everybody would come to the counter and say, make me look like RuPaul. at the time, right? It was like boy, girl, anything. It was make me look like RuPaul. And like, you know, it was such an amazing culture that I don't know if like the Sephora has, because that's only makeup, you know?
Right. And I think because MAC was so much about the artistry.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was. Yeah.
That too, I think, is different because now everyone's basing education off of social.
Yes.
And there's this whole homogenous kind of look that's come in that everyone is expecting to either get or try to learn. And I don't know. It's such a different beast now, because back then it was so, you know, you had Bobby Brown, and a little later it was like Laura Mercier and stuff like that. So you had your makeup artist brands who had their own point of difference, but MAC was just like pure artistry.
Expression. Yeah. That's very interesting. Now you think that they what do they want to look like? They want to look like an Instagram artist. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just, it's.
And it's hard to make faces look like a filtered, like an altered face. Right.
Right. Or you do so much makeup that you think that having that filtered look is what you need to achieve.
Ooh.
And that's even worse. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, don't get me started.
I hear you. But your claim to fame is is really like this clean, beautiful. I mean, you can simply say no makeup, makeup. But like, I feel like, you know, everybody is always referring to your style, you know, and really just making the person look like their best self. And that's something that's much harder than it looks, much harder than it looks. And
it's funny. I mean, sorry to catch up. Yeah,
no,
it's just funny to me because, I mean, working in fashion, fashion's literally no makeup, makeup.
Right. And like one
thing. You know
thing,
what I mean?
Yeah, the skin.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
So you were raised by Pat McGrath, right?
Yeah, I assisted her back in, well, I met her in 97.
Okay.
And then
here,
started work. Actually, she did a capsule collection for Aveda.
Okay.
So I met her through them, and I used to teach for Aveda. Yeah. So I didn't get to New York until I reconnected with her the end of 99. And then I started assisting on her show team, but I was only with her for like less than a year and realized that wasn't sustainable because I'd moved up here full time. I was broke.
Yeah.
Like, and then trying to wait to get paid.
It's not glamorous.
Just like, nope. I was like, she needs a job. She needs to pay this rent. So then I went back and got a job at Aveda doing in the sales and education department, which then went into marketing.
Okay.
So that's how I kind of got my foot wet with product development and stuff. Because Aveda was still a small team back then.
And you were in the color part of it? You were when did they launch their makeup line?
Oh God, they launched makeup. It used to be called Indra.
And
really? Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Like late 80s, early 90s.
Stop.
Yeah, so they've had makeup forever.
I didn't know this about Aveda. I need to go to Aveda school.
It was incredible education for me. It really was. Yeah.
And then this is before they were acquired by Estee Lauder?
Yeah, I think Lauder bought them in 97.
Okay.
And it was around the same time that I want to say that Bobby Brown got purchased as well.
Okay.
But yeah, they still have makeup.
Oh, yes, I know. I love Aveda. I really do. But I remember a distinct shift in pre-Este and post,
yeah,
which was more skews and, you know, but it was very, yeah, like lots of food. There was like bars and it was like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like Banana Republic. Remember when Banana Republic was like wooden floors and, you know, like, it was that kind of shift where it just became a little bit more organized. And like, I remember the raw Aveda, it was more earthy or.
Yeah. Yeah. Know. Yeah. When it was still Horace, the founder, because yeah, I think he bought the building that the Fifth Avenue Aveda store was at.
Okay.
So that was his building.
Oh, wow.
And then he had the store on the ground floor. It's like Fifth and Eighth Street.
Yes, yes, I know. It's still there, yes. Mm-hmm.
And then that was kind of, I don't know if that was the flagship before the Institute, but then when the Institute happened because of Lauder.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I know the Institute well because that's where I used to get all my facials when I was broke.
Oh, yeah. I know when they had the students doing, totally. Oh my God, amazing, totally. Oh, that's so awesome.
But it is, it's the look of your natural beauty, you know, that obviously appealed to Meghan Markle and sort of, you had been doing makeup for years before this epic wedding. And, you know, can you talk about that? How that fits into your life? You know, that it happens a lot where, you know, you are going along and you have a very accomplished, amazing career. And then you become a household name because of this iconic event.
So crazy.
And I mean, how does it feel to you? I mean, now it's been a couple of years and you've been digesting it this whole time, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it's easier to digest because we're real friends.
Right.
So like, I think it'd be a bit different if I was just hired, because then having that stigma of, you know, oh, you're Meghan Markle's makeup artist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That would like drive me apeshit crazy. To
sure. I know. I completely understand.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if absolutely, you're always that person's, you know, that person's always going to step before your talent.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been friends with Meghan for 10 years. And when they announced the engagement, we were still in touch, but I just never thought that she would ask. It just never, you know, because at that point we're all like, okay, she's in a whole different stratosphere.
Yeah.
Everything's different, but we still kept in touch. And then when she asked me, she literally texted me.
Oh,
so
stop.
I was like,
love that.
I was like, okay. And then I'm like, but how does this work?
How does this even, what next?
Yeah. Cause it's like, how, like I'm in New York, she's in London. How do we coordinate a trial?
Oh, like, yeah, I forgot about the trial aspect.
Yeah.
Like developing. Yeah. How did that work?
It all was on Pinterest and texting.
Stop it. That's so sweet.
And at that point, we had been working with each other for so long that I knew what she wanted.
Yep.
So it was kind of easy. And then literally the day of was just like us reconnecting, getting back together. And again, like I think if we weren't friends and we didn't know each other so well, it'd be a whole different dynamic.
Yeah. Have you had an experience like that where you've been, it's a big event and you're kind of nervous and you're hired for the event and
there's a lot on the Met Gala.
Okay. That's another look. Okay. Let's put a pin in that one because I do want to talk to you about the Met Gala as well.
Yeah. So there's been situations or like a cover of with someone really special. So it's just, you kind of have to come prepared. I love Pinterest for that reason because it's literally like my mood board. So mm-hmm. if a photographer is like, you know, this is where I'm thinking, then I can just pull up my Pinterest and like, I just have a ton of folders with all these images. So it's all like these historical references or makeup that I love. So much of it is 90s.
Oh my God, please. I know. Why? Of course it is. Of course, because you're smart.
So you guys
traded Pinterest boards, and then did you know Serge was doing the hair?
No.
Oh,
so that was the kicker. So I didn't know what she was wearing, and I didn't know who was doing her hair until the morning of the wedding.
So you and Serge just like saw each other there?
Oh my God. It was like having not seen like a relative for like years, because I was coming in one way and he was coming down the stairs, and we both locked eyes, and it was just like this like sigh of relief.
Because I feel so emotional for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, at the end of the day, we wanted to make sure our friend looked her best.
Exactly.
And I mean, I'm sure you know this, but like when you work with someone really well, you know that everything's going to be okay. And up to that point, there was just so much happening, you know, outside of our bubble that we had no control over. So right, we just right. wanted to feel like, okay, we want to make sure that she's taken care of, but how do we do that? And so much of it is the rapport that you have with the hairdresser or the designer or whoever you're collaborating with. So literally when he came walking down the stairs, it was just like, ugh.
Oh,
because if you're not vibing with the rest of the crew, oh my God.
You feel
God,
so alone.
Yeah. And the talent feels it. And they're the ones that needs to be taken care of.
Right. Right. I mean, are you of that thought that it is the client that is the most, you can tell, I heard you saying in an interview, I watched it so many with you. And that's what I love about you is you're in the corporate world and you are a brand ambassador, but yet you're so honest. And I love that about you. I think it's so refreshing and wonderful. But you were saying that, you know, you can feel when the talent or the client feels their best. Is that an instinct thing, or is it just something that makes you a special makeup artist? Because I feel like a lot of people don't have that chip, you know, and they just put their own thing on somebody's face.
Right. I think it's important because, I mean, it's like when you put on something like clothes and when it fits so well, you feel good in it.
Yes.
You should feel like that with your makeup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Your makeup should never feel like something that's going to hide who you are.
No.
And there's some people that love that full beat down that feels like, okay, once this is on, it's kind of like armor.
So
it separates the, you know, persona of that person to the rest of the world, which is totally fine. But if you aren't feeling good, you don't take good pictures. That's just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
So part of my job is to make sure that you feel your best and to also trust me with what it is that you want to express. Because if you can't share how you want to feel, that's a whole different ballgame.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's almost like I need to figure out what makes you feel most beautiful so I can make you feel proud of putting yourself out there.
Wow. Wow. That is so essential for those press junkets like you do, you know, because they have to feel, I feel like I was looking at one with Elizabeth Moss that you did. And you know, she looked very different in each shot, in each, you know, interview, but always super confident. And it's what you're talking about. It's a balance of it being armor because it is a character, but it's also so soft and pretty. And that's what makes you such a great artist, I think.
I think too, because of the women that I work with, they play a character. So when they're not working, they just want to look pretty.
Yeah, simple.
Yeah. I mean, for Handmaids, Lizzie is literally in no makeup and just looking just ratchet and just like beat down. So when she's like herself, she just wants to feel good and look pretty.
Yeah. It's true. She very rarely gets to do that since Peggy's gone away.
Right, totally.
She's murdering people and getting her revenge, doing all this great scenery chewing. So about the Met Ball, so that's very different. So that's not, you weren't doing your friend, you were doing Ruth, yeah?
Oh yeah, Ruth's amazing.
And
so talented.
And how did that come about? You must have been so excited. You're like, oh, gala, you want to do it?
Totally.
Was that camp year?
Yeah, that was camp year. So also too, you have to really understand their themes in particular, because it could either borderline go very camp or not enough.
So that's worse, right?
Yeah.
Not enough is worse.
They had their vision for the talent. And then you also have to appease the talent themselves. So her camp was the big hair. Yeah, very exaggerated. So I was like, okay, let's really give your brows like a really hard
arch. That's what I was
just
going to say. How did you do those brows? Because those are some brow goals.
Yeah. I mean, she has a really high arch naturally, but I really exaggerated it.
Nice.
So that was kind of like the camp element. I think if I took her makeup any further, she would almost look like she's trying too hard. So it's like, where do you find that balance of like nodding the theme without losing integrity of who you are? Because if you're not comfortable with what hair makeup is done, you're not going to feel good in that dress. And then it looks bad in the picture. And then the designer's pissed that like something's off.
And it's all designer centric for the Met Ball. Yes. It's, you 100%. Must. Okay. So has there ever been a situation or a fear that you might upstage or not be in alignment with the designer?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Usually with the Met Gala, the talent's going with the designer. So will be there through the whole time. And this is kind of like their moment with their Barbie doll. So to
yes,
speak.
Yes, yes.
Or their team has sent references and then you have this to play off of.
Got it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can kind of go back and look at pictures and just like see the cringeworthy looks over the years. And you're like, something's off here. But
somebody wasn't in alignment here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. And then another look I wanted to talk to you about was Gemma Chan. You did a lot of work with Gemma. And this is super sexy. And I wanted to ask you specifically how you made the lashes or the eyes or something is really inviting and like sexy about this, yet it still looks like not everyday makeup. I mean, I wish this was my everyday makeup. But it's glamorous, but it's still simple.
I think that was the last shot of the day.
Oh, well.
And it was literally, magical. they set up this, like they wanted to create this like backstage element. So literally she was just in the mirror waiting for them to adjust the lights when the photographer's like, oh my God, stay there. And that's where you get the best pictures too, is it was like this candid moment. Her makeup never changed. The looks changed through that day. But literally that was the last shot. And she was just like hanging out. Her arms were on the mirror I can't remember if it was a he or she. I think it was a male photographer. Just started shooting her. And that's what he caught. And it was so beautiful because it was just this moment that wasn't posed. It wasn't forced. And I think that's what comes through.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's effortless, completely effortless. Yeah.
She's amazing. And she just like, I've learned a lot of new makeup stuff from Gemma actually.
Oh, really? What?
She had like, she introduced me to the Benefit eyebrow gel.
I have it on right now.
Oh my obsessed. God, that stuff is magic.
Why is it like, so good? I know.
For her, she was like, this is the only brow gel I use. And this is why. And I was like, oh my God. Cause Asians have like, really straight long brows and they just don't hold, and this one just the way she did, I was like, okay, I need this in my kit. And like she has this mascara trick where she takes a wand from one mascara and the formula from another mascara and put in, that's her combination. I can't remember what the mascaras were, but they were like, maybe I think it was like L'Oreal. Like the formula was Laura.
Oh, the what? Voluminous, probably.
Yeah, yeah. But they're different in the UK. The
of course.
Always. So she has this way of, yeah. And it was just awesome. I was like, oh my God.
That is too funny. I know when I go to the UK or somebody goes, I make them bring me back Elnett because the size of the aerosol. And I just, everybody says, but I saw this at the store. And I'm like, no. Right. Oh my goodness. They don't understand, Daniel. And then I was looking up the the Italian Vogue that you worked on. You did Veronica Webb and then came across this shoot.
Because I guess
Veronica Webb and you. I love Veronica.
She's amazing.
And so you've done so much amazing work together. I know she has melasma. I don't think I'm outing her or anything. I mean, she talks.
No. Okay. She's very open about it. Yeah.
But what are some tricks that you remember doing with that? Do you have to use correction?
Or? Yeah, I use it's Krylon Derma. Dermacolor, Derma.
Flash.
Derma Blend, Derma Flash.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So. And there's just something about that particular formula that just really grabs onto foundation.
Okay.
When you put it on top of it, so you correct with it. And then I'll just use a light dusting of powder just to set that. And then I can go over it with foundation and it locks down.
Nice. Well, her skin looks flawless. And then do you remember when this shoot was?
Yeah. So that was a lookbook shoot for our friend Sophie Thiele's line. So her and Sophie have known each other for almost 30 years.
Wow.
Because Sophie used to work under Azzedine Alaia.
Oh.
And Veronica was like his daughter.
Wow. Yeah.
So they've known each other forever, but Sophie used to live here in New York and we were
Sophie worked under Azzedine. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. And she worked under Jean-Paul Gaultier as well.
Wow. And this was her first lookbook?
That was her. Oh gosh. Good question. I want to say Sophie won the CFDA. Oh God. 7 years ago, almost 10 years ago, maybe. That was pretty well into her tenure here. Like, I don't know what season that was, but that was a lookbook shoot for her. Sophie is now living in Montreal. She moved to Montreal. And she's still designing and stuff. But so that was a lookbook shoot.
And then the Italian Vogue shoot, that was 2008.
What? Oh my God.
It brought me to this whole train of thought that I wanted to explore with you about diversity and how that was 2008. That was Italian Vogue. And I don't know why was it so long ago? And then what happened 2009 through, you know, where what's happening with diversity, Daniel? What's happening? Are we getting anywhere?
It's a hot mess, girl.
I know. I'm worried. And
I think about your 12-year-old son. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder what they're all thinking. Like, this should evolve, not necessarily. I mean, it would have, in an incredible world, it would have been fixed by now, but obviously it's not. And I feel like we're even digressed to when, you know, us dealing with the Rodney King situation back in 1990.
My God. And now it's like, just George Floyd. And it's like,
yeah,
what was that, 1992, Rodney King?
Yeah. So it's like, why haven't we as a culture figured this shit out? Like,
no,
it's disgusting. And it's gotten to a point where it's just pure hate.
Right. And what is making it that? Is it why is it so hurtful and strong? Is it because of the anonymity of social media? I mean, I'll tell you something. Can I tell you something? I know I didn't prepare you for this and we don't.
No, tell me, girl. I am all about it.
I wanted to have, when AAPI, Stop Asian Hate was the hashtag like 2 weeks ago, almost like, or three. I was like, I said to Kelly, should we do one on this? Should we have a conversation on this on the podcast? And then we decided that we were too nervous to handle the conversation. Okay. Cause I was scared of saying the wrong thing and whatnot. And I was going to like call Kathleen Howe and, you know, from The Cut and see mm-hmm. if she wanted to come on to talk to you about this, Daniel. And, you know, she said, I just don't know how we navigate the comments, what happens if we misstep. And that made me so devastated because here we are having a platform where we're able to have these conversations and yet we're scared of saying the wrong thing and having us shut our whole thing down. So wouldn't it be better if I made the mistake in front of you and you can just correct me and you can say, Tiffany, that this is how we need to think about things from now on, you know, and I'm yeah. having it in public. I view that as really healthy. And, you know, I made a lot of mistakes with BLM and then I was able to have people that I trust and love correct me, fix, you know, go, no, and that I can have the conversation. But now I feel like everybody is so afraid that we don't ever get to have the conversation. Like Kathleen Howe deleted her whole social media.
Right.
What are you
seeing?
I mean,
that was just, I mean, the thing is that, you know, BLM and what's happening now are two separate situations.
100%, right? That's the first thing.
Yeah. So I feel like at the end of the day, it's a human rights issue.
Yes.
And it's unfortunate that it's targeted to the AAPI community because they're an easy target. And it goes back to the rhetoric of the last administration.
Uh-huh.
So if they didn't plant the seed,
yeah.
and say that this virus that no one knew anything about came out of China, it didn't imprint in everyone's brain that this was hurting so many people.
Yeah.
So that's the core of this misinformation right now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then, you know, mental illness, whoever took that information and now is seeing that, okay, the AAPI community is what's caused this. So let me go after, but like what happened yesterday on 43rd Street.
I saw that.
That was just pure hate.
Yeah.
And we got to come together to feel like, okay, when we see shit like that happen, we need to say something because those three guys who witnessed that and just closed the door, they're just as complicit as the dude who did what he did to that woman.
Exactly.
So we need to see, if we see something, we need to say something, we need to nip it in the bud. And that's where the education starts. That's where the empathy starts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like instead of trying to figure out what the best protocol or best way to handle this, it's just go with your gut instinct. If you see something, you have to say something. You know what I mean? I don't know where we lost empathy.
Is it because we're too scared to get involved? Is there a consequence for getting involved? Okay, so we need to reward people for getting involved, right?
I don't know. It's so right? bizarre because literally all three men just stood there.
I know. And closed the door.
And closed the door. So I mean, I saw something, I would have run out. I would have, you know, if he was across the street, at least acknowledged her, but they literally just stood there and watched. And then, I mean, I wonder what those guys are thinking now because the whole world is looking at them.
I mean, have they had anything to say for themselves? No, it hasn't been revisited. We don't know where that has gone.
Yeah.
Right. I wish that there was some kind of law that you were breaking by being complicit.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? It seems there's no consequence for being complicit with something, but there is a consequence for being involved. Like, I guess they thought they would get hurt. I mean, these three tough guys.
Right. Or accused of doing that to her. I don't know. Like, it's
interesting.
It's just the fact that they, like, the one guy who was the delivery guy, he literally saw her get kicked in the head. So there's one person that witnessed that whole entire situation. And then you see the two other guys come in and then shut the door.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't make sense. And no. I think that's what we're all grappling at, is the fact that no one stood up for her or no one inquired about what had happened. They just let it happen.
Yeah. But now I did see at the Arlo Hotel. Did you hear about that?
Yeah.
They seem to be holding the hotel responsible, right? For basically accusing the child of stealing the phone. So I guess that's what we could do, is hold that venue responsible.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know that there was a call to action to the management company, I think it was Brodsky, who managed that apartment building, who then put out this statement saying that the doormen, because they're union, are suspended without pay and then being investigated.
Okay.
And also the delivery guy who was there.
Okay.
So they're doing their due diligence, but like you said, what is the consequence for those men who did nothing?
Right. That's what needs to happen. Yes. And what else can we do? What else, what resources can we do?
I mean, AAPI, StopAsianHate.org is a great organization.
Okay.
They list so much where you can donate, where you can help. I know that there's other local organizations that you can either donate to, but so much of it is just education. And just checking in on your
knowledge and checking in on your friends, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have to admit, like, I signed up for like self-defense classes this week, because like, I just don't want to be put in a situation that I can't get myself out of. And this is the first time living in New York, I've been here over 20 years, that I feel like this.
Oh, I don't like hearing that.
I haven't taken the subway in months, just because I'm like, I don't want to have to deal with that shit.
Wow.
Yeah. It's the first time I've ever felt like I'm a target.
It really feels like moving backwards in time.
Truly. And I mean, it's like bad 80s New York without the creativity.
That is so accurate, right? Yeah. Oh my God. And then what about the call to beauty brands for taking a stand? How do you feel about that?
I mean, every brand is different. Uh-huh. And you know, as long as they make the acknowledgement, and then I know, like, we at Tatcha, we donated to a few charities, but again, you know, it's having these conversations with your teams. We need more representation in C-suite positions. We just need more visibility. Even in journalism, like in the beginning, these stories weren't being reported because there were no mainstream journalists of Asian descent that would bring it to its attention. No one on that Anderson Cooper level or Rachel Maddow level.
Of course.
I mean, I think in the 80s, we had like Connie Chung.
Connie Chung, that was it.
That was it. Ann Curry, who's biracial.
Right.
She never really spoke about, you know, her being Asian, but she was kind of like the last.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lisa Ling, who's now on CNN, but she's a correspondent. So, and she's using her platform now, but there's not a lot.
Right. Well, so what we can do is just pay attention right now, right?
Yeah.
And really deeply listen.
Yeah.
Yes, because it's shocking to me to hear these stories and see these events, but until I saw them, you know, even in social media and on the news as of recently, I truly didn't realize that it was all coming up again like this, because we're in our bubble that of course would never consider these behaviors, these thoughts, these things. So you have to show the ugly things in order to confront them. Yeah.
100%.
Wow.
We've been living in a bubble, I think, in New York for so long.
It's true. It's true.
When these things happen, it's like a wake up call.
I think that the more divided we become, somebody said to me that it was good to have those 4 years of division, because we truly would have just gone and operating on a level of superiority and not ever knowing that this underbelly existed until they were empowered to speak out. And then we're like, wow, I am not in a time machine. This is happening in my decade.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. But yeah, it's true.
I just hope it gets better for your son.
You know, it's so funny you should say that, because I was showing him a document, I think on Stacey Abrams or one, and it was a social documentary. And I was showing him stuff from the 60s, and Selma was in the footage, and my son said, "Turn this off. You know, I don't want to see this. This is scary." And then I said, "You have to see what all these people came from, what all these people," and he said to me, and I just wanted to die. He said, "This is happening at the Barclays Center, Mom. I can see it anytime. And it's really scary." And I was like, "Oh my God, it's happening in his, this is real news for him. It's the past for me. And now it's happening again." He's like, "I can see this level of anger and violence at any time on my daily news." And he was like, "I need a break from all of it." And I was like, wow, I forgot that we're there again.
right.
So
wow, that's so interesting.
It's lucky in a way that he's able to hear all of this as it's happening. And I feel this generation will be so empowered to take positive action and be an incredible generation and be the most powerful to create change, really.
Yeah.
But it's sad that they have to revisit all this.
Yeah. You know? I mean, yeah, it's interesting to see the city kids go through all of this, and then look at kids who aren't, you know, like I look at my nieces and nephews who are in Seattle, and or like in a suburb outside of Seattle, and it's so different.
Yeah.
And just the perspectives of what's happening socially has been really, really interesting.
How are they seeing it?
I think they're just removed, because it's not in their face. Whereas your son is literally walking outside and he's seeing all of this.
Right.
He's experiencing all of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there is an awareness and a toughness.
Yeah.
Being a city kid.
But the most empathy ever, which is the blessing of all of it. Yeah.
Right. 100%.
Thank God for that. 100%. It's the only positive thing, but it is quite positive. So, and it's what will take, it will take. The empathy, I guess, is the key that we're taking away from seeing all of this.
Yeah. Yeah,
sure. I can't believe I sidetracked you with all of that.
But isn't it
funny how I think it's people think the big thing about this particular podcast is that, you know, we have a lot of listeners that are makeup junkies and are, you know, of the elite, you know, circle of beauty, but also a lot of people who don't realize that makeup artists think about these things. They think you know, we just are worried about that perfect lip, or, you know, you're just, how do you do a natural smoky eye? And this whole world of beauty gives everybody access to a mosaic of people. And I mean, that was the best part about working at the counter, right? You had every type of person. I mean,
100%.
People, let's be honest, we're freaking homeless. And they were like, they just wanted a break from it. And you know what? Sometimes you just did their makeup anyway, and you knew they weren't going to buy anything. And like, it was somebody off the street who just wanted to play. And that's what made us all so leveled.
And I think too, like, we makeup brings people together because of how it makes them feel. This pandemic definitely like was a wake up call for me and how I understand what makeup can do and the power that it gives. But also, you know, as it brings us together, we really need to understand that there is life outside of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's beautiful and it's exhilarating and it makes, you know, it gives you that empowerment. But at the same time, it's, you know, you have to be very aware of everything else.
Yes, yes, yes. How have you redefined or altered your purpose in this? Like, you are at Tatcha, you are at the, I'd say, corporate level, you know, like, not to sound, but you can make a big difference with business, right? Business of beauty. How have you changed or thought that makeup is more?
I think for me and for where the brand wants to go is, Vicky always, the founder of Tatcha, Victoria Tsai, has always told me that I'm in the business of taking care of people's skin. I'm not in the skincare business.
Mm.
So always having that in the back of my mind, whether we're creating new products or how we're, you know, even relating to customers, is always going to be something that's more nurturing and more, you know, I don't want to say self-care. You know, I guess it is self-care, but you have to break that. You have to take the salesy part out.
Yeah.
And it's so much about the connection of the product to the person. And I think right now, because the whole business is flooded with all of these like celebrity brands and skincare brands that don't really have a point of difference, it's really confusing to the consumer to understand what's good for their skin or not.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you're spending so much money now to find that one product that really works for you. So I think what, you know, what brands need to do now is really connect with a person on an emotional level,
mm-hmm.
because trends are fleeting. You know, what could be hot on TikTok right now, give it a week and it's gone.
Yeah.
So it's this, you know, entrapment of catch up that you're playing to either pump out new product or pump out like a trend that's trending. But at the end of the day, you need to connect with the consumer. And it needs to be authentic. So I think that's what people are going to be shopping for, is that authentic connection, that story that resonates with them, not so much about like the hot new eyeshadow color or, you know, the 820 skincare step. Like,
I know, I really like how Tatcha is like the water cream is good for every skin type. You know what I mean? And it's true. It's beautiful and works on everybody. And I think things like that are real, you know, rather than it be, it's something that'll make you, you know, as we know with aging, our skin behaves differently and you can use it
totally
for a lifetime, you know?
Yeah.
I can't ever believe I had oily skin. Like, please bring it back.
Totally. Oh my God. Yeah. I feel like this pandemic has completely threw my skin out of whack.
Oh my
God. So I'm still trying to figure
out. You said you
had
eczema in some of it, right?
Yeah. I'm still suffering. Like last week, I think because it was such a busy week, I would scratch my arm and it would hive up.
Oh God. That's stress. Stress. Yeah.
So it's just like trying to figure out and balance out everything, because it's getting older sucks. But then on top of it, like trying to figure out your skin is even worse.
There's a reason they call it science, I guess.
Right.
Well, totally. I am so happy for, and you're loving Jones Road Beauty, right? Is that what I've been hearing?
Oh my God, yeah.
Yes.
And just like to be able to have this newfound relationship with Bobbi Brown, who's an icon. Like, she's the coolest woman ever. Like, oh my God, she's just, I mean, there's a reason why she is who she is, and she's so like giving of her knowledge.
Yeah, like, definitely.
Really incredible.
I love seeing this phase of her because I just feel like, you know, I'm surprised by it, you know, and I'm surprised that it's so simple. And yeah. I love all of the stuff and I just
it's so good.
Welcome it. And I think it's a perfect time for her to just 100%. Keep it simple and perfect.
Yeah.
And it really goes well with Tasha too, because like, it's just like a few simple things that you can rely on and it just
100%. Yeah. Like simple, effective ingredients. That's what anybody wants right now.
Exactly.
No one has time for fussy. It's going to be really interesting to see once we get out of this COVID situation, where we're going to head to.
To like roaring 20s versus simple?
Right. Yeah. Or if it's celebrating, are we still going to dress up? Are we still going to, I mean, because people want to get dressed up, but they're not wearing as much.
That's true.
Like, especially makeup. Yeah. Like, you know, being with Maya, she was like, I just want to feel like myself. She doesn't, you know, also too, she's playing a character on SNL. So everything's constantly changing. But when we were doing press, she was like, I just want to look and feel like my best self.
Those press photos, she looked stunning.
Those were fun. Yeah.
Beautiful. Really beautiful. Beautiful. Her skin is probably amazing.
Oh, amazing. And she's just such a good person, you know what I mean? And she felt good. So that goes back to what we were saying. Like, once you feel good, your pictures says it all.
Well, I think it has to do with having a master at the makeup artistry end of things, you know. Think you have to give yourself a little bit of credit.
It was a great team. It was a really great team. Aww.
Thanks for listening to our conversation, everybody. And I hope that you check out the links that I have in the show notes for Stop AAPI Hate. And please continue to do what you can. Keep doing what you're doing to stop what's happening out there. And when you see something, say something, do whatever you can. Keep doing it. Next week, it is somebody's birthday. And that somebody is Selena. So I am having a Selena expert on, San Siguenza. He's an incredible artist, a dear, dear friend of mine, and someone who knows so much about Selena. So we are going to celebrate her next week. I hope you will tune in. That's Friday, and I'll see you then. Look Behind the Look is a Vinyl Foot production, written by me, your host, Tiffany Bartok, produced by Jace Bartok, and produced and edited by Kelly Riley, with audio engineering by Nicole Tucker. If you're interested in learning more, find our video version on the YouTube channel, Look Behind the Look Podcast. There you can see rare photos and clips from our guests. And please follow us on Twitter at Look Behind Pod and Instagram at Look Behind the Look. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe. And tell your friends and spread the word. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or any podcatcher of your choice. Thanks for listening to Look Behind the Look.